IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. My name is Sachin Kalbag. I am a senior fellow at Takshashila Institution. Today I'm joined by Sanskriti Menon. She's a senior program director, Center for Environment Education, where she leads the CE Urban Program, the Coast and Marine Program, and the Central Regional Cell that works in Goa, Chhattisgarh, MP, and Maharashtra. Her works, areas of work include community and school-based environmental education, urban transportation, management waste, and participatory governance. She has been involved in the promotion of public transport, especially bus rapid transit, and the developing of the Pune Cycle Plan. Sanskriti Menon, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sachin. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, so today we want to tackle a very, very important topic, but something that gets perhaps ignored in the mainstream media outside of the city that is affected by it, and that is Pune, one of India's fastest growing cities, the place where hundreds of education institutions are present. The real estate sector is booming, software sector is booming, the population is growing. And yet every single day we hear that the people of Pune are not satisfied, or they're worried, they're concerned about their public transport infrastructure, the mobility, the last mile solutions to their transportation problems, such as reaching home, going to work, or just plain connectivity from one end to the other. Now, Sanskriti has been working for a long time in this particular field. We will broadly talk about the issues that are concerning Pune. What are the short-term impact? What is the short-term impact of those problems? And of course, what are the long-term solutions? I wanted to start off, Ms. Menon, by asking you, of course, Pune is one of the fastest growing cities in the country. It is easily the second most important financial center of Maharashtra. Yet, it does not seem to get the attention that Mumbai gets in terms of mobility infrastructure. I would love to hear from you, what are the main concerns that Pune's residents have, and why are policymakers slash politicians not able to tackle them at a fast pace? Can you elaborate on each of them? We would love to hear your thoughts on this.
Sachin, thanks. And it's really something that is a very urgent and critical sort of a situation for Pune, Pimpri Chinchwad, the metropolitan area. And you're right. I mean, the Pune metropolitan region with the cities of Pune and Pimpri Chinchwad, including the Hinjawadi area, is a major center for education and industry, especially both manufacturing and software. Now, the public bus system, just to go back a bit, the Pune Municipal Transport, as it was originally called, was initiated as early as 1950. And Pune also used to be a city of bicycles even till the early 90s, And I remember seeing the railway station at Kharki, the parking lot there, filled with bicycles, as people would also take local trains to go to factories to Pimpri Chinchwad, And so walking, cycling and taking the bus or the local train were travel modes till about a generation ago. But post-1991, there has been a steady increase in the number of private vehicles. And the growth could possibly be attributed to various factors such as liberalization and accelerated urbanization and industrialization, and certainly the growth of the automotive industry and income increases. But on the other hand, as the number of trips has increased and the distances traveled has increased, somehow the public transport facilities have not really kept pace. And as Pune changed from, a pensioner's paradise to a younger demographic with, the changes in the industry and the education scene here, and with also some, major automotive manufacturers located in Pune, the marketing strategies, etc., the city travel mode has also changed. And Pune went from being a city of cycles and bus, public bus, to a city of motorized two-wheelers. And so much so that in 2018, newspaper reported that the number of vehicles registered in Pune was more than the population. And, in 2023, the number of vehicles registered in the Pune RTO was higher than the four RTO offices in Bombay. That is about close to 2.9 lakh vehicles were registered in Pune, and of which 33,000 were electric vehicles. But they are still, private vehicles which are in the city. Now, the enormous rise in private vehicle numbers shows that the options people have for their mobility are grossly inadequate. And so that itself is a very big problem. But some of the other consequences, there are direct and they are easily perceived, and there are certain not so direct impacts. But the direct ones, of course, very easily to easy to understand. There is congestion, which not only leads to thousands of hours of lost time, but also leads to stress and road rage. And then, of course, there is air pollution. And people think that, maybe Pune is not as polluted as Delhi, and that's great. But Pune has increasingly being seen, seeing a lot of air pollution days as well, high air pollution days as well. And, this not only leads to respiratory diseases, but much more serious health issues, because the pollutants from vehicle emissions do cross into the bloodstream, and they can impact the heart and the brain and other sensitive organs as well. And at the city scale, the response to congested roads has often been road widening, which has meant that hundreds of beautiful old growth trees in the city, large banyans that the city has been, famous for and very proud of and part of the beautiful cityscape, those have been cut. Yeah, and it is counterintuitive, but worldwide it is seen that widening roads and building flyovers just attracts more private vehicles. It is really like adding fuel to fire. And Sachin, there are also not so evident other impacts. A city which is largely dependent on private vehicles and where public transport is neglected is a city which is not inclusive. So children, elderly people, women, or people with difficulties in mobility, they find it increasingly difficult to navigate the city. This means that, there's a loss of opportunity for children. For example, they are not able to go to the school that they want, or, they will not be able to cross the road on the other side. So they're restricted to friends or social, relationships on this side of the road, for example. Now, today, motorbikes are stuck in traffic, and then they're forced to ride on footpaths. And the city, because there's a lot of construction happening in the city, has also dug up footpaths and cycle tracks to widen the carriageway. And this puts pedestrians and cyclists, especially children, elderly people, women, more and more at risk. And there is really something which is really shocking. There is a recent analysis. It's shocking, but perhaps unsurprising, because Pune has the second highest number of children dying in road crashes in million plus cities. So this is in India after Mumbai. And going by per lakh population, Pune is probably the most unsafe city for children as road users.
That's quite shocking.
Absolutely. It is. I mean, it should stop your heart to see that this is what we have come to. But there's one more impact which is not evident with the rise of vehicle numbers. This also impacts groundwater. Now, this is again something strange that you might ask, how does this happen? But, these 45 lakh bikes and cars that are there, they need to be parked somewhere. And Aquadam, which is a groundwater expert organization in Pune, they've cautioned that the new buildings being built with two or three basements, they excavate deep. And that has just emptied out shallow aquifers across the city. And Pune is also facing, falling groundwater levels. So this sort of systemic relationship between what you see on the surface and what else it impacts, that is something to be really worried about. And citizens in Pune, we are really at a loss why politicians and administration have let things come to such a breaking point. We are at a juncture that it should become politically difficult to not do anything about it.
One of the things that we were studying while in college as part of our statistics and mathematics program was something called the Bray's paradox, where it says, systemic increase in networks and systemic increase in, you know, trying to solve a systemic problem actually creates a greater stress on that system. And this is something that we've seen in Mumbai as well, where a large part of the public transport infrastructure, or rather the transport infrastructure, was until a few years ago focused on private vehicles. So you build flyovers, you build more roads, you widen the roads, etc. But as Bray's paradox had predicted many decades ago, the number of vehicles increasing meant that the congestion problem actually went up. Do you see something similar in Pune as well? Because I you know, as an outsider, I don't live in Pune, of course, but as an outsider, as a policy student, you get to see how the new infrastructure projects or any such thing are focused mostly on private vehicles, and only now in the last couple of years that the Pune Metro, for instance, has been given some sort of precedence over other forms of transport, or the bus rapid transit, for instance, was introduced, not very, very, wholly accepted by the entire city of Pune, but there was a, big push towards that, in that direction. What are your thoughts on this?
Yes, Sachin. And certainly, the systems sort of paradox is very evident, especially in the transportation sector. And, there's a saying that a great city is not where the poor travel by cars, but where the rich travel by public transport. And, therein perhaps lies also the answer. And, I think this thinking at the country level, or there are certain policies like the National Urban Transport Policy, which the Ministry of Urban Development issued in 2006, which does say the right things, which is to improve public transport and walking and cycling facilities. There are also policies for regulating parking around public transport corridors. There's a standard for the number of buses a city needs, which the Central Institute of Road Transport, the CIRT, has indicated, which is at least 50 buses per lakh population for a city like Pune. And the Indian Road Congress has also been publishing codes for the design of streets and footpaths and cycleways. Now, so these sort of national level policies are there, the codes are there. And it's really up to the cities now to implement these very, very comprehensively. So I'm not saying that both Pune and Pimpri Chinchwad, in fact, they have taken a few steps to improve the situation, just as you mentioned. Pune, yes, it was amongst the first in the country to implement the bus rapid transit. And again, this might seem counterintuitive because, you find a lot of public outcry that the BRT system is occupying such a lot of road space, etc. But they are, in fact, a way of using both buses and road space more efficiently. They also provide a number of amenities and services to bus users, like good bus shelters and the information on bus arrival and being able to buy the ticket before you board the bus. And, when this revised the Rainbow Bus Rapid Transit System was launched in 2015, the surveys after the launch showed high satisfaction levels amongst the commuters, and even a shift. That is, some people who were using bikes started to use the Rainbow BRT. Unfortunately, the three corridors in Pune and the four corridors in Pimpri Chinchwad, those were launched. And this was with the funding from the central government, Pune and PCMC were supposed to create a network of about 100 kilometers across the city. But this wasn't completed. And, the number of buses that we needed to run the BRT well, those have really not been there with Pune Mahanagar, with the PMPNO, which is the bus service operator. And now, unfortunately, the PMC has chosen to remove the corridors, and the others are derelict. More or less, it's become completely dysfunctional. But that was the way to go, because you want to use the little road width you have much more efficiently, and you want to use your buses more efficiently. So you don't want them stuck behind congestion. You want them moving fast and taking the passengers, many passengers within a lane. So this needs to be reversed. You should put the BRT back. But on the other hand, there's another excellent activity which has been of street design, which both Pune and PCMC have taken, and they've created pilot roads or some roads which are really well designed with well structured motor vehicle lanes and junctions and good footpaths. And in fact, the PCMC recently hosted municipal officials and engineers from several other cities to show how it's done. So we really need that much of the street network that can be designed as in this manner. We need to go beyond these initial pilots. And as you mentioned, there is the comprehensive bicycle plan under which a citywide cycle infrastructure with tracks and cycle parking and integration with other modes, this was expected to be done. The PMC, the Pune General Body of Elected Representatives, they passed the bicycle plan in 2018, but implementation has been very, very slow. Pimpri-Chinchwad also, you know, it's one of the 8 participating cities in the Bloomberg Initiative for Cycling Infrastructure, and they're new plan for green mobility, which is called Harit Setu. So all these are good initiatives in both the cities, but a lot more needs to be done to catch up and meet the deficit.
And that's an interesting point you raised, Ms. Menon. One is that for a long time, we had not seen the involvement of the pedestrian in the as being a stakeholder in this entire transport or mobility planning. So when you are saying that, you know, footpaths are being designed well, or a bicycle parking is being designed well, or bicycle routes are being designed well, it also automatically means that the pedestrian is now, you know, taken very seriously as a user of city services. Is there a major shift in the thinking from policymakers on this? Do you think that Pune has finally woken up and said, let's give the pedestrian an equal stake in the growth of mobility infrastructure in the city?
One would wish it was so, but it's a bit erratic, and it really depends a lot on the leadership, I would say. You know, so the street design work shows that it can be done, and you can create, you can carve out space as you should. The codes, the national codes say that streets must be designed this way. So, you know, the policy articulation is that, yes, pedestrians are extremely important and they have the right to the road. You know, it is the motor vehicle driver who needs a license to be on the road. Pedestrians don't need a license to be on the road. It's their right to be there. Yeah. So, I would say that, you know, both the municipal road departments and the urban designers, when they go to work on street design, the road departments and the engineering departments of both Pune and Pimpri-Chinchwad, they are highly professional. They do know that this needs to be done. You know, they have done really good work. In Pune, there is also the school transport improvement plan. But what happens is that it's a bit of a vicious, and it's not easy, I should say, it's a bit of a wicked problem there. You know, so when they go to work, they go to an area, they say that these are the designs, there will be, of course, resistance, typically from motorists who will find their parking space taken away, which they have often been parking on the footpath. But dialogue and, you know, participatory street design with local stakeholders, showing the mock-ups or doing what is known as tactical urbanisms to show that what street improvements are possible and how they can be done. We do a trial which helps build confidence and also sends the message that streets have to be inclusive. So that creates that dialogue space that, you know, why is this shift happening? Why is the street being designed this way? And that forces the discussion. And I said that road safety, you know, that is the other big element. So over the last few months, the Pune District Road Safety Committee, which is chaired by the collector, and under an initiative with UNICEF and with CE, where I work, and Rise Infinity Foundation, we took up a pilot project to strengthen school zones and make them safer. And the PMC has also been doing that, PCMC also. So institutionally, this requires coordination across departments and agencies, the road, the electrical, traffic police, the public transport provider, and the school management committee, because they have to take some ownership for keeping children safe as road users. Now, the school management committee, the neighborhood of the school, all have a role in making the school zone safe. But this forces attention onto pedestrians. Children are pedestrians or they're cyclists. And such dialogue is a key element. We need really more of these.
One of the points I wanted to expand on, you know, when you mentioned that in Pune, safety of school children is, you know, is quite shocking in the sense that, you know, numbers are shocking. And if there is any way to save lives of our children, What are those steps that the PMC or the local authorities or even civic organizations, when and how can they come together to save lives at a level where we are, which is going to affect the entire next generation? So if school children are not safe, even in Mumbai, we are facing similar issues. And one of the things I wanted to bring to the conversation was that when I was talking to for a similar podcast, when I was talking to planners in Mumbai and people who are part of the stakeholding community in Mumbai, they said that a holistic solution for a city as complex as Mumbai seems like a like a fairy tale wish. But if we are looking at ward by ward solutions, perhaps that is where our middle to long term, or the short to middle term solutions may lie. Do you think that a similar approach to policy making in Pune, because Pune is of course much, much bigger than Mumbai in terms of geographical area, but in terms of just policy approach, do you think that these region by region or ward by ward approach may look or may be implemented much quicker in a more efficient manner? What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I do tend to agree. I mean, of course, there are like structural things that need to be fixed, which is at the at the city scale or at the regional scale. But on the other hand, it's very important that we have the ward by ward conversation and ward by ward solutioning. A, because it also provides for a human scale dialogue to take place. And it is the school in your neighborhood. It is the school that your children or your neighbor's children go to. Your neighbors or you yourself are part of the school management committee, you can see. And, creating the safe school zone, for example, seeing that, the Ajji has access to the park or you're able to go to the neighborhood shop safely. This brings the problem and the solution much closer to you. You can sit down and actually work it out. It seems like a problem that you can address locally with your own community, with your own elected representatives, with your neighbors and friends. So I feel there's a lot of power to making such platforms and conversations actually take place. I'm all for this. And very importantly, for the safe school zone, things like that speeds need to be reduced, that you can do something quite interesting, which is like a walking or a cycling school bus, which is what some schools in Pune are also trying, where children cycle together or children walk together, and an adult volunteer from the neighborhood goes along with them. I think this working together at a local scale is a very important piece of the conversation, or the solution rather.
On that note, we'll take a short break. There'll be some messages and we'll see you on the other side.
Stay tuned to All Things Policy. We'll be right back after a short commercial break.
Okay, welcome back to All Things Policy. You're listening to me, Sachin Kalbag, and Sanskriti Menon from Pune. She's a mobility and public transport infrastructure expert. Before the break, we were speaking about how school zones can be made safer. But on the city level scale, Ms. Menon, how do you marry a holistic mobility plan with tactical on-ground improvement? This would require not only officials from the government at a larger scale, but also the involvement of, as we discussed previously just before the break, involvement of ward by ward citizen representatives to not only put forward their concerns, but also work on solutions that are unique perhaps to their own wards and their own communities and their own neighborhoods. Do you see this as this confluence of ideas as a possible solution for maybe one ward or one region and then extrapolate it to the rest of the city? Is it a possible approach to have to policy making?
Yeah, I think this has a lot of power. And, at the local scale, certainly the public, residents associations and civil society have a big role. And see, the in Pune and Pimpri Chinchwad, what has happened is that NGOs or civil society organizations, they have played an active role in getting several of the innovations that we've mentioned underway. And through some conscious networking efforts that were taken some years ago, civil society organizations from different disciplines, you know, social and environmental causes, they've been working together. And this has made for some very rich and fruitful outcomes. So what we also hope to do is conduct some really carefully structured public deliberations and citizens assemblies. These are innovations in you know, citizen-centric and participatory public policy formulation, which are meant to be inclusive and deliberative and effective. So it's not like a simple workshop where you call people who come because they are interested or because they have the time, but you actually make a platform where you know, people of different walks of life, they are you know, representative of the demographics of the city, they are invited to be in. And just like with the seriousness that you would hold a parliament deliberation, you hold a citizens' deliberation. You provide all the information that is necessary, maybe expert views, maybe lived experience, maybe examples from all across the world or the country of things that have worked out well, you know. And we hope to conduct such dialogues and deliberations, you know, around, say, things like the parking policy or the school zones and even revitalization of city precincts. So I think this would be a powerful way of impacting both local design as well as city scale policy. But it means that you are able to construct these platforms in an inclusive, deliberative, and effective citizen-centric way.
One of the points that many Mumbaikars and Punekars often speak about is the connectivity between the two cities. While the intra-city transportation is perhaps not as you know, as significantly attached to the highway commuting between the two cities, but we see that increasingly Mumbai is expanding towards Navi Mumbai and beyond, and Pune is expanding towards the express highway, expressway. When these two issues overlap, we see that the traffic jams that happen across every weekend going in and out of Pune or going in and out of Mumbai, they seem to be driven by a large number of people using their private vehicles. But at the same time, there is hardly any effort to build public transport infrastructure capacity, whether they be trains or whether they be buses or even the airport. Where is the gap? And why is that gap not being fixed? Is it a deliberation gap? Is it a communications issue between state government and the central government? Because these issues are often overlapping with the, you know, between these two federal structures. Is there a policy issue? Is it an ideation issue? Where are these, you know, where are the hurdles coming from? And how do you think we can jump over those hurdles to reach that finishing line?
Sachin, the governance for sustainable mobility is something that needs serious attention at the country scale. You know, so it's not enough to have the technical policy because we need the governance infrastructure as well. And, you know, so because travel demand, as you mentioned, it's beyond the city scale. Cities are expanding. And the municipal mandate, firstly, it doesn't fully cover the planning and operation of mobility services within the municipal area also. And it certainly does not cover regional scale planning and operation of mobility services. And so we find that while, you know, of course, the borders are transparent, I mean, free, everybody travels across, there is no authority which is actually managing mobility with sustainable mobility in mind. It's like a very much a free market sort of a scenario with no, not enough planning put in place. And there's because there is no structure which is doing the planning. And so both the cities can't do it. The PMRDA on its own can't do it because both the cities are, the PMRDA is the Pune Metropolitan Regional Development Authority. And for the bus service provider, the train services, the metro services, both the cities and the Metropolitan Regional Authority. Now, all of these needed to plan things together. I think there are some things which are happening now because obviously they do need to coordinate and do need to plan at the regional scale. But as we said, that this is very much beyond the breaking point at the moment. There's a lot of catching up to do, and the governance infrastructure which needs to be robust and really guided by sustainable mobility principles, that is pretty inadequate, I would say. And in both the cities, as it is in urban areas in Maharashtra currently, there is no locally elected government. The municipal elected representatives are not there. As the term ended a couple of years ago, and local elections have not taken place to form the new governments. And so there is a fair amount of gap between what is needed to be done and the government infrastructure to do it. This needs
in
to
Mumbai,
be.
Yeah, I mean, you may raise a very important point, because in Mumbai, like many urban agglomerations in the state of Maharashtra are facing, is the lack of elected representatives for more than 2 years now, or nearly 2 years now. And while the municipal commissioners have been, or the district magistrates and whoever is in charge, have been running the city or running the local governance, the fact is that there is no one, no politician who's accountable to the people, who can go back and say, vote for me because I did this. Also, the politicians themselves are in limbo because they don't know whether they'll be nominated for the next round of elections. So they are not stakeholders in that sense. So there is this huge gap, and the communication or the deliberation between civil society representatives or even common citizens with the bureaucrats is becoming increasingly under stress, because bureaucrats have their own work to complete, and at the same time they have to have an interface with the citizens, which puts additional pressure on their timelines. They prefer to finish their work and not talk to the civil society. Case in point, for example, one of the major bridges that collapsed or was torn down a few years ago. And suddenly now you have a situation where the connecting bridge are not even aligned to each other. It's people are laughing at it. It's become a joke. But at the same time, the BMC is trying to come up with excuses. So I'm trying to understand, from a policy point of view, how do we overcome these political challenges that may come up every few years? And how do we maintain the coordination and the communication between the different stakeholders, and especially the citizens and the government, to continuously work on this? How do we sustain that pressure?
So, Sachin, I wish I knew the answer to that. We are caught in a vicious cycle, and the city is at a breaking point. But the main thing is that we should not now get what in climate change discussion is known as maladaptation. That is the wrong solution. For example, the response should not be to build more and more roads as the main plank of the solution, as you also mentioned earlier in our talk today. So I feel that the public is, of course, raising its voice. And it is clear because, local elections must happen. The state itself will go to the polls next year. And of course, the politicians need to address the issue. I mean, the administration is going to follow, but the politicians must actually, though it's difficult, it's vicious, it's like grasping a nettle, but they have to do it. And I think the country political leaderships must orient their members, the political parties must orient their rank and file of their membership. The leadership should orient them to what is sustainable mobility, as well as I think the administrative training institutions, whether it's for the Indian Administrative Services or the State Administrative Services, the engineering services, they must train engineering departments and all the other departments on what is sustainable mobility, because it is really key to the success of cities and how livable the cities are, how the city mobility is planned. And of course, I mean, civil society is there. It's kind of active. And as I mentioned, many things have happened because of civil society. We are not giving up. we are trying the different ways of continuing discussion every time there are new elected or administrative leaders. Civil society organizations do go to them and, orient them to what has happened. And often we've had commissioners also saying, I didn't know this point of view, so it's good that you interact. So we keep that up. And I don't know, I just want to share that, while there is a lot of frustration around, but we are trying to do our bit as well. And just to share a little bit of a positive thing, which we hope to be doing very soon, it's something which was known as the Pune Cycle Partnership. This was something which was part of the Pune Cycle Plan. So it was really for part of the formal plan. And apart from the provisions in the physical infrastructure in the cycle plan, there is also the provision for this Pune Cycle Partnership as a public-private entity with the PMC also as a stakeholder for supporting the cycle partnership. So while we await the municipal corporation and do things with the infrastructure, what we hope to do with the bicycle partnership or the Pune Cycle Partnership is really look at the culture of cycling. And we hope that we can make it accessible and the preferred mode, at least for local trips, make cycling safe for school children, like with these cycling school buses, etc. With all the people who want to cycle but cannot cycle, make some kind of a buddy cycling a service or a facility available, as well as with corporates trying to see that if they're happy to cycle to work, can we recognize all the workplaces that support commute to work. So this is something that is exciting for us, and it's a civil society initiative which we hope to do along with the municipal corporations and the metros and corporates and schools, etc., colleges and neighborhoods. Something that we keep up the discussion, keep up the dialogue, keep up some action, and volunteering is possible. So we're really looking forward to something like this, which keeps sustainable mobility right in the center of things.
Yeah, that sounds very encouraging, because if you succeed perhaps in a couple of areas in Pune, maybe that can be extrapolated to the rest of the city as well. Do you think it's a model that can be replicated easily?
We certainly hope so. I think there's interest in cycling. There's a large number of people who cycle for recreation. And many of them do cycle, also commute short distances perhaps. So if you're able to mobilize and gather, express this interest and desire for cycling again, or safe cycling again, I think things could change. I mean, we are at such a low that I'm hoping that we will soon see the inflection of the curve, and things will become better. I certainly hope so.
Okay, on that note, Ms. Menon, thank you so much for joining us for this All Things Policy podcast. We know that this one discussion will not find solutions for the long term, but at least let's hope that this spurs the talk, the discourse that Pune definitely needs at this point of time. Thank you once again, and we'll see you sometime around soon.
Thank you, Sachin. It was a pleasure being here.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.